Let's continue on in the Bhagavad Gita, because we're in a really beautiful section in the 13th chapter, 8th verse. We're learning so much from this one verse. This is a lifetime of practice packed into one verse, because Krishna is giving us 20 items which he says are knowledge, or the process of knowledge. And everything else you can just block out of your mind, because everything else is ignorance. Makes life simple. So on page 573, we have the list, which I'll read, and then I'll go to the part of the purport that we're working on. Is that okay? What this list is, Krishna, in the previous verse, has mentioned the material elements and their interactions, which he calls the field, which means the machine, the body. The material world's going on as a big machine, so is the body. Miraculous machines. They're all working by the energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He says in the Bhagavad Gita, Mayadyakshena prakriti suyate sacharacharam hetunanena kuntiya jagadviparivartate, which really, it means, ultimately, by the glance of Krishna, everything is taking place miraculously. It's incalculable how material nature goes on the way it goes on. Everything's in perfect balance here. The planets are suspended, and all the organs of the body are working in harmony. A process called homeostasis keeps us at a constant level and temperature, and the heartbeat is going on automatically. It's a machine, a yantra. And all this whole machinery of the material nature takes place by the glance of Krishna. It can only take place by the superior power of the Supreme Personality of God, who looks over material nature. In fact, in the teachings in the Srimad Bhagavatam between Maitreya and Vidura, it's in the third canto. Maitreya was a great sage who was actually a contemporary of Srila Vyasadeva. And Vidura approached him to know about self-realization. And he asked him many questions. He wanted to ask him many esoteric questions, but he began by asking him very basic questions, because that's what sadhus do. They ask the basic questions first for completeness and also for the benefit of others. And when Vidura asked him questions about, one of the first questions he asked him was, everyone's working hard in this world to find happiness and avoid distress, but they're getting the opposite. Why is that? Good question to ask. Many people never ask it. They just go on getting beat over the head again and again. And in the course of it, he wanted to know about, you know, what is our situation in the material world. So Maitreya gave him a detailed explanation of what this material world is and how it works and how it comes into being and how we got here in the first place. And one of the things that he says is that the demigods, who are empowered living beings, they're living entities, but they're empowered to take care of certain universal duties. Like there's the movements of material nature are actually are going on by personal forces, living and conscious living beings who run those things. You may say, well, I can't see him. Well, do you see the guy who sends you the bill from the electric company? Do you know where he is or she is? Where? I have no idea. I don't have time to find out, frankly. Just pay the bill so my light stays on. But if you trace it out, if you go back and you look, you'll find something. One day I was sitting at the ashram in Govardhan, and I was looking out into the courtyard. It's covered, but there's an open air section you can look out. And I had been there for about a week and a half, and we were absorbed in hearing and chanting, so I really didn't think much about who was cooking there. But it was really nice prasadam. We'd sit down, and the brahmacharis would come, and they'd serve out all the prasadam. And I was thinking, nice prasadam every day. And I thought, I don't even know who the cook is. In fact, I'm not even sure where the kitchen is. And but the prasadam was coming. And I thought, you know, I looked out into nature, and I was thinking, like, I could conclude, actually, there is no cook, and there is no kitchen. It just appears here. You know, this prasadam just shows up every day. After all, it's always here, right? That would be an ungrateful way of seeing the world, but that's the way many people see it. And in fact, I looked out into nature, and I saw how everything was working outside in the courtyard, and I thought, I could also come to the conclusion that the light and the water and the air and all the other functions of material nature were just happening automatically. There's no cook. There's no cause behind it all, right? So when I did find out where the kitchen was and I met the cook, it changed my perspective dramatically. I actually knew who he was. I saw what he went through. I knew his routine. There are controllers behind the material nature who take care of the universal affairs. Just because you can't see them right now doesn't mean they're not there. So in his teachings, Maitreya told Vidura that at one point at the beginning of creation, the demigods who are entrusted with the duties of running the universal affairs come to the Lord and they say, "We don't know what to do. How are we going to do this? It's a big job." And they begin to offer prayers. And in their prayers, they say, "We're helpless. Please empower us. Please show us how to do this." And this is the power of the Lord. Without his giving sanction and without his empowerment, no one can do anything, actually. Sarvasya chaham riti sani vishto matak smritir gyanam apohanam cha. The intelligence to move or to do anything is coming by the will of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So the universal affairs are dependent on these beings who are dependent on the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And in this chapter called Nature, the Enjoyer, and Consciousness, Krishna has described the big, huge creation of this material world and the elements of material nature which are interacting with each other as the field and the big machine that's going on. And then to go beyond that, to transcend that realm and to understand one's self, which is different from the body, and to understand the super self, the super consciousness, which is the Supreme Personality of God, or who is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one must follow a process. Now, there are 20 elements in that process, and by studying this verse in the 13th chapter, we can understand how to mold our life in such a way that we'll come to understand the Supreme Truth beyond the interactions of the modes of nature and their interactions. So, this is the list on page 573. Humility, pridelessness, nonviolence, tolerance, simplicity, approaching a bona fide spiritual master, cleanliness, steadiness, self-control, renunciation of the objects of sense gratification, absence of false ego, the perception of the evil of birth, death, old age, and disease, detachment, freedom from entanglement with children, wife, home, and the rest, even-mindedness amid pleasant and unpleasant events, constant and unalloyed devotion to me, aspiring to live in a solitary place, detachment from the general mass of people, accepting the importance of self-realization and philosophical search for the absolute truth. All these I declare to be knowledge, and besides this, whatever there may be, is ignorance. Don't you feel better now? I know I do. Just hearing the list actually makes me feel better, because these are extraordinary elements, and each one of them actually is conducive to happiness extricating myself from the difficulties of the material world. So having the formula and hearing what the elements are individually is satisfying. Then in the purport, Srila Prabhupada unpacks each one of them and explains what it means. It sort of defines them. So my point is that by studying this verse or this series of verses, which is 8 through 12 in the 13th chapter, and applying each one of them or applying the ones that appeal to you, for starters, then you'll make progress in devotional service. So we've discussed several of them in the list, and last week we finished with, on page 575, with simplicity and approaching a spiritual master. Does anybody remember anything from the discussion about simplicity or approaching a spiritual master? Yes. Simplicity. Simplicity means that without diplomacy, one should be so straightforward that he can disclose the real truth even to an enemy. As for acceptance of the spiritual master, that is essential because without the instruction of a bona fide spiritual master, one cannot progress in the spiritual science. One should approach the spiritual master with all humility and offer him all services so that he will be pleased to bestow his blessings upon the disciple. Because a bona fide spiritual master is a representative of Krishna, if he bestows any blessings upon his disciple, that will make the disciple immediately advanced without the disciples following the regulative principles. Or the regulative principles will be easier for one who has served the spiritual master without reservation. Questions? Yes. Use the microphone, it's being broadcast internationally.
What about Bali Maharaj? He rejected his words of his guru, so Shukracharya. So, is that simplicity or some other quality?
This is that quality is Bhavagrahi Janardana, as described in the pastime itself. When Bali Maharaj was he comes from a long line of demons, and he had successfully overthrown Indra, the king of the Devas. And so they were out. This goes on, this constant struggle, because as Krishna says in the 14th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, the modes are always fighting with each other. So the demigods are in the mode of goodness, and the demons are in the mode of passion and ignorance. And so as the modes shift from one place to another, certain people have advantages at certain times. In any case, Bali Maharaj had defeated Indra and become the king of the universe. And he was performing a huge yajna when the demigods had gone to Lord Vishnu, gone to Brahma, and Brahma had appealed to Vishnu to please help us with this. So the Lord agreed to appear, and he came as Vaman. And Vaman entered into that assembly where the sacrifice was going on by Bali Maharaj and all of his demons. When Bali Maharaj saw Vamandev, he had the inclination to surrender to him. He felt it in his heart. This is revealed later in the pastime. In his heart, he felt there's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And at the time, because he was engaged in a yajna, and because of the social constraints, meaning he was surrounded by demons, and they all were depending on him, he couldn't just get down and bow down to Lord Vishnu at this point. But in his heart, he was wishing that he could. And Krishna knew it. Because he knows what's in everyone's heart. Vedaham samatitani vartamanani charjana bhavishani chabutani mamtu vedana kashchana. Krishna says, I know everything, I know everyone. I know exactly what he knows exactly what my intention is. And this is bhava grahi janardana. It means he understands what our bhava is. In fact, in the Srimad Bhagavatam, Karabhajana Muni says that Sapada mulam bhajata priyasya taktanya bhavasa hari pareshaha vikarma yat shot patitam katanchid dhunoti sarvam hridi sannivishtaha. That for the devotee who's engaged in serving him, if somehow or other the devotee does some vikarma, means he falls down or makes a misstep, because the devotee's intention is not to make a misstep, is actually to serve Krishna, but by past bad habit or by some circumstance, he's thrown off course temporarily. Krishna knows bhavasya hare priyasaha, that his bhava, the bhava of the devotee actually, is to surrender everything to Krishna, but he just can't do it right now. So vikarmayat shotpatitam katanchit tunoti sarvam pratisannivishta. Krishna is there within the heart. He recognizes the devotee's intention, and therefore he saves him. He rectifies the devotee in miraculous ways. Therefore, when one performs devotional service, says Shukadeva Goswami in the sixth canto of the Bhagavatam, one who makes a mistake doesn't have to perform prayaschitta, as one does when one is performing karmakanda for a material result or for a good result for oneself. Because one's intention is to serve Krishna, one simply has to go on in devotional service, and he will be rectified by Krishna within the heart. So Vamandev knew this was the intention of Bali Maharaj, and he orchestrated this begging of three steps of land. And Shukracharya was in the background. Shukracharya should give you a hint just because of his name. Shukracharya means a seminal guru. Shukra means semen. So it means he's the guru with the intelligence to direct one in materialistic life, not to surrender to Vishnu. And that was the case. So he gave bad advice, and Bali Maharaj rejected it. Shukracharya, standing behind Bali Maharaj, he said, "This Vamana is not a Brahmana. He's the greatest cheater, Lord Vishnu." And Bali Maharaj said, "Well, if he's Lord Vishnu, then I should give him what he wants." And that is a very important lesson, because we follow Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. And the Guru teaches that we must understand Shastra, and we must corroborate what we understand from Shastra with what the Guru says and what the Sadhus say. 1, 2, 3. If you draw a line through the 1, 2, 3, you get a straight line. If you just put one point, you can draw a line from any direction. Okay, 2 dots, and you get a straight line. I know, I could see you thinking like you could get 2 straight lines. But the point is, the corroboration process, this is that must be there. So if the guru is saying something that's not in Shastra, then we have to wonder, what kind of guru is he? Because the guru is representative of Krishna, representing what Krishna is saying in Shastras. So that must line up. So one must understand, what is a guru? When one is looking for guidance, then one has to consult Shastra and learn, you know, what is the nature of guru? How do I take that guidance? It's not out of sentimentality. It's also not out of ecclesiastical consideration. But one must find out, as Lord Chaitanya said, "Kiba viprakiba nyasti shudra kena noi ye Krishna tattva veta she guru hoy." Doesn't matter where the guru comes from, but he or she must know the science of Krishna and be able to present it. So Bali Maharaj's rejecting Shukracharya was a good lesson to see that if the guru is not teaching to surrender to Krishna, is teaching something else, then that guru should be rejected. Did that answer your question?
My question was, what's the quality that Bali Maharaj exhibited in this? What is the quality that he exhibited in this? In short, what's the quality? Is that enumerated in that list? Or
yes.
I just thought this way because I just think that he did exhibit the quality of simplicity, because I was talking to another devotee who has been serving in ISKCON for a very long time, but very hesitant to take initiation. His argument was, because so many gurus are falling down, he doesn't want to take initiation and commit fully. That was the kind of argument he was giving. But then, we should just simply follow Shastra. Means, just Krishna says that the only way is you accept a spiritual master. And even if the spiritual master falls down, that's not your problem. Because you're just following what Krishna says, that you accept a spiritual master. Then in the case of Bali Maharaj, he did was following Sukracharya because according to time, place and circumstances, he was following that. But when the time came that his Guru Maharaj is going out of Krishna consciousness, then Krishna himself took the control of him. So in that way, Bali Maharaj was very simple, following the instructions. But when the time came, Krishna took care of him. So like that, if we simply follow the instructions of Shastras, sometimes people may try to abuse us or whatever it is. If we just simply follow Krishna, simple surrender unto me, I will protect you, then Krishna will protect us. So that simplicity of heart, if it is there, as you said, I think that bhavagrahi, Krishna definitely protects us, irrespective of whatever happens to us within whatever instructions we follow.
Nice point. Very nice point. I saw just recently a text from Gopi Puranadhani Prabhu, who's the head of the Sanskrit Academy at Govardhan. He's a very humble and advanced devotee. And someone was asking him about how is it one finds good guidance. And he mentioned sincerity and honesty. There was one other attribute, but I can't remember it, but those two specifically were very important. And honesty is definitely related to simplicity, as Prabhupada mentions here. Honesty and sincerity. Those qualities will... sincerity is ironclad. If someone is sincere and honest, Krishna will give proper direction and protection. Simplicity. Hare Krishna. Satyadev Prabhu, care to comment?
I liked your comment very much. Just to expand on that, that Prabhupada, he said in a number of letters, he said that not that we're blind followers and that we shouldn't, you know, examine our guru before we choose them, and the guru also has to examine the disciple, but in this material world, anything can happen. And so that is a possibility. But ultimately, Prabhupada says that the guru is actually not a person, but a principle. And the principle you're talking about is that one must accept a spiritual master. One surrenders to Krishna through his representative, and Krishna's made this system, and he wants us to follow it. And if we do, then he'll be there to back us up. And sometimes things happen in this material world. And even at the time of Sanatana Goswami, the six Goswamis, the direct followers of Lord Chaitanya, and the Hari Bhakti Vilas, Sanatana Goswami actually writes down, well, if your guru leaves Krishna consciousness or, you know, suddenly is not following the Shastra or the sadhus, then what do you do? So that means that even at that time, these things were happening. And so he said, you have two choices. You can continue to pray for your guru, that your guru will come back, or you can, and then in the meantime, you take shelter of an advanced shiksha guru, you take guidance from another advanced sadhu that you have faith in because of your direct experience. Maybe this person has helped you in the past. Or you can take reinitiation, but it's not, you're lost, and now, you know, you have no future. in spiritual life because your guru has fallen down. But Krishna is ultimately the guru. And the guru is only a guru because he's giving you Krishna's teaching without change, and because he's following that teaching. Therefore, he can become guru. So that's one point that I was thinking about. Yeah.
I realized a long time ago when I met Prabhupada that...
Use the microphone, please.
I realized a long time ago...
Could I turn it on?
I noticed, and the first meeting of Srila Prabhupada, that he was the embodiment of the spiritual world, and especially in his presence, many of us, if not all of us, noticed that Prabhupada made everything illuminating around him. Sunlight was brighter, birds were more chirping, and the magnolia trees in front of the temple had more aroma. And I was thinking, in these many years since Prabhupada has gone back to Krishna, that there's not too many people that are completely surrendered to Krishna like Prabhupada. And hopefully we'll see more devotees becoming so purified that they inspire all of us. And Srila Prabhupada wanted us all to become pure devotees, all of his disciples and his grand disciples. He said the only way to save the world is to completely surrender to Prabhupada. And so we have to want Krishna more than we want anything else. And if we don't, then Maya will take us. So, it's extremely important to want Krishna, to give him our love. And it's all about love. It's all about giving the heart. I get very emotional when I think of those extremely blissful early days. But they can be here today. We just have to hear the mantra. I once heard this Indian man at a Hindu temple. He said, "Oh, this mantra is just an exercise for the mind." And I said, "It's more than that. The mantra is the spiritual world. It is Krishna. And we're part of that mantra because we're part of Krishna." So the Maha Mantra is quite amazing. So we should all chant very carefully, listen carefully, but we should give the heart along with the Maha Mantra. And then that mantra, of course, surpasses all Vedic knowledge. Prabhupada wanted us to read the books. He didn't translate them for nothing. But the Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. That's who we are. That is love. It's Krishna. We're connected. There's no separation from us and Krishna. And we can become conscious again of our loving relationship just by completely involving ourselves during especially early Japa Mala in the morning, and gradually all contamination will fade away, and we'll start realizing who we are, because that's what it is. It's a very very wonderful thing that we have Lord Chaitanya's Maha, you know, great Maha mantra, and all the gurus, acharyas, we're all trying, everyone is trying to teach everyone else about love. It's all about love. It's all about the flow of energy from the heart. So all of us, we should just try to completely surrender, and everything will become known. Everything will be revealed through our own hearts by Krishna's mercy. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. More on this subject? Yes. Please.
Just cite, you know, the history, or like the history we have in our books of devotees having different gurus at different times. And we in Japan, we've been reading the fourth canto in the story of Dhruva Maharaj. So Dhruva Maharaj's first guru was actually his mother, Suniti, who told him, you know, if you want to fulfill your desires, then you have to please the Lord, you have to find the Lord, and therefore you're going to have to go to the forest and do yoga. And then as soon as Krishna, within his heart, is Chaita Guru, as soon as he saw Dhruva Maharaj's desire to find him, then he immediately arranged for him to meet Narada Muni. So Narada Muni appeared and also gave him instruction as a Shiksha Guru first. And the first instructions that Narada Muni gave to Dhruva Maharaj says, "Frankly, Narada Muni, I can't follow these instructions. Please give me an instruction that I can honestly follow according to my level." And then Narada Muni said, "Well, you know, you're a 5-year-old boy, and maybe you should grow up and then come back and try this process later." So he was testing him. He didn't initiate him right away. And Dhruva Maharaj says, "No, no, no. Just give me a process I can honestly follow. I want to do this." And then at that point, Narada Muni initiated him. He went to the forest. He actually went to Vrindavan, on the bank of the Jamuna at Mahavan, and he began to follow Narada Muni's instructions. And then he became perfected in devotional service in 6 months. He actually saw the Lord, but he didn't go back to Godhead at that time. He went back and he ruled his kingdom after his father died, and he lived as a normal king. And then during that time, he got involved in the material world, and the demons killed his brother, and he became very angry about that, and then he started wiping out the demons. And then Swayambhuva Manu, his grandfather, came to him and said, "You know, Dhruva Maharaj, you're not really acting like a pure devotee of the Lord. Pure devotees aren't so angry, overcome by anger, and they're no longer in identification with their mind and their body, and they don't see this person as my brother and this person's not my brother." And the point I'm making is that Dhruva Maharaj got a little bit off track. So Krishna again came to him in the form of a Shiksha Guru, which was Swayambhuva Manu, and again gave him relevant instructions, you know, woke him up again, and then he became very serious and, you know, renounced the kingdom and began to perform devotional service again. And Swayambhuva Manu also pointed out that while you were getting so angry, killing the demons, you also offended some pure devotees. You offended Kuvera, and you offended Lord Shiva. So he pointed out his fault so that he wouldn't be overcome by this offense. And then Dhruva Maharaj, he apologized to Lord Shiva, and he apologized to Kuvera. And then he renounced and performed devotional service. And again, at the end, Kuvera also gave him instructions. So he, during his lifespan, he had one Diksha Guru, and he had four Shiksha Gurus. And they were all Krishna coming to him, helping him advance. And then at the very end, he went back to Godhead. And when he got on the plane, he started going through the universe, and he saw, now I'm going to Vaikuntha. And then he remembered his mother, Suniti, who was his first guru, who without her instruction, he never would have taken up devotional service. And he began to think, oh my God, how can I go back to Godhead without my mother, who it's because of her mercy, actually, that I'm going back to Godhead right now. And as soon as the Vishnu Dutas saw his mind, they saw Dhruva Maharaja's mind, that he's remembering his mother. Then they gave him the vision that actually, you know, your mother's also in a Vaikuntha airplane, and she's also going back to Godhead. So Prabhupada mentions in the purport that sometimes the disciple becomes more advanced than the guru. And that because the guru having such an advanced disciple goes back to Godhead because of the advancement of that disciple. And then Prabhupada, he writes in the purport, he hopes that one of his disciples will take him back to Godhead. But the point is that Krishna is the guru, and that when we surrender to him, he takes care of us, and he makes the arrangements that need to be made in order for us to find our way back to him.
Yeah, the guru wants to introduce us to Krishna so that we can have that love. That's the purpose of guru, representing Krishna. Give us Krishna. Give us the mantra so we can have Krishna. That's the great mercy of the guru.
More questions about this topic?
Proji, I have a question.
Yes.
So, what is the destiny? Means, what is the ultimate end of a person, like who really think that who does exemplary service, but really doesn't want to take initiation because of so many misconceptions or whatever he has? So, but does like exemplary services and wants to serve Prabhupada, but not taking formal initiation. So, how does?
Let's ask Prabhupada. Is that all right? This chapter of the Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, Adi 1, first chapter, is called The Spiritual Masters. And here, Srila Prabhupada gives, Krishnadas Kaviraj gives many instructions about spiritual master, and also, of course, Srila Prabhupada gives details. This is text number 35. Mantra Guru Aro Jata Shiksha Guru Gan Tanghara Charana Age Koriya Vandan. I first offer my respectful obeisances at the lotus feet of my initiating spiritual master and all my instructing spiritual masters. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Srila Jiva Goswami in his thesis, Bhakti Sandarbha 202, has stated that uncontaminated devotional service is the objective of pure Vaishnavas, and that one has to execute such service in the association of other devotees. By associating with devotees of Lord Krishna, one develops a sense of Krishna consciousness and thus becomes inclined toward the loving service of the Lord. This is the process of approaching the Supreme Lord by gradual appreciation in devotional service. If one desires unalloyed devotional service, one must associate with devotees of Sri Krishna, for by such association only can a conditioned soul achieve a taste for transcendental love and thus revive his eternal relationship with Godhead in a specific manifestation and in terms of the specific transcendental mellow, rasa, that one has eternally inherent in him. If one develops love for Krishna by Krishna conscious activities, one can know the Supreme Absolute Truth. But he who tries to understand God simply by logical arguments will not succeed, nor will he get a taste for unalloyed devotion. The secret is that one must submissively listen to those who know perfectly the science of God, and one must begin the mode of service regulated by the preceptor. A devotee already attracted by the name, form, qualities, etc. of the Supreme Lord may be directed to a specific manner of devotional service. He need not waste time in approaching the Lord through logic. The expert spiritual master knows well how to engage his disciples' energy in the transcendental loving service of the Lord, and thus he engages a devotee in a specific devotional service according to his special tendency. A devotee must have only one initiating spiritual master, because in the scriptures acceptance of more than one is always forbidden. There is no limit, however, to the number of instructing spiritual masters one may accept. Generally, a spiritual master who constantly instructs a disciple in spiritual science becomes his initiating spiritual master later on. One should always remember that a person who is reluctant to accept a spiritual master and be initiated is sure to be baffled in his endeavor to go back to Godhead. One who is not properly initiated may present himself as a great devotee, but in fact he is sure to encounter many stumbling blocks on his path of progress towards spiritual realization, with the result that he must continue his term of material existence without relief. Such a helpless person is compared to a ship without a rudder, for such a ship can never reach its destination. It is imperative, therefore, that one accept a spiritual master if he at all desires to gain the favor of the Lord. The service of the spiritual master is essential. If there is no chance to serve the spiritual master directly, a devotee should serve him by remembering his instructions. There is no difference between the spiritual master's instructions and the spiritual master himself. In his absence, therefore, his words of direction should be the pride of the disciple. If one thinks that he is above consulting anyone else, including a spiritual master, he is at once an offender at the lotus feet of the Lord. Such an offender can never go back to Godhead. It is imperative that a serious person accept a bona fide spiritual master in terms of the Shastric injunctions. Sri Jiva Goswami advises that one not accept a spiritual master in terms of hereditary or customary social or ecclesiastical conventions. One should simply try to find a genuinely qualified spiritual master for actual advancement in spiritual understanding. Did that answer your question? Yes? More questions?
This is just a follow-on question.
Okay.
One might say, okay, Shastra says I have to accept a spiritual master. But I will accept a spiritual master, but does that spiritual master have to be a living person? Or in other words, I might say, you know, I don't trust anyone, I trust only Narada Muni. And so Narada Muni is my spiritual master. So what is this?
Very clearly in this verse, Srila Prabhupada mentions, according to Shastric injunctions. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna talks about a parampara system. Evam parampara praptam imam raja shayo viduhu. He says, this is how you come to know about Krishna. Now, parampara has a very specific meaning. It means one after another. And later in the Bhagavad Gita, or earlier, Krishna says, Ye mam idam nityam anutishtanti manava, that one who follows my order without envy and without changing it attains success. In fact, he says one must follow my order because Krishna's instruction and his method of presenting is eternally true without exception. And therefore one must accept it. His process, his system, is clearly delineated in Shastra. It's what he recommends, that one accept a spiritual master who can direct one, that one can give direct service to. This is parampara. This is the system. So there is no other system. It's been going on for millions of years, thousands of years, and any other kind of system is a concoction. It's not according to Shastra. And if it's not according to Shastra, then it's not vidhanena. Our Goswamis, who we are followers of, Rupa Goswami and the other Goswamis, have very clearly delineated the process of initiation, for instance, in the Hari Bhakti Vilas, which was directly ordered by Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu so that Vaishnavas would know how to take Vaishnav initiation. And there, it's very clear how one comes to take shelter of a bona fide spiritual master, inquire from him, and take initiation from him. And all of those things require that one approach a person. Otherwise, who are you talking to? What are you doing? Are you self-medicating? You can say, well, Prabhupada's in his books, and that question was directly asked to Prabhupada. It's on record, it's on tape, where Prabhupada was asked, a woman asked him, so how do we take a spiritual master? Can we take a spiritual master through books? And Prabhupada said, yes, through books, but also personal. And then Shama Sundar, who was there, thought maybe he didn't hear the whole question. So he said, she's asking if one can take a spiritual master through books. And Prabhupada said, of course through books, but it must be concrete. He said, you don't make a spiritual master in the air. You make the spiritual master concrete. There's a relationship there that is required. And if you look at it just from a very simple point of view, parampara has been going on since the very beginning of time. Changing a system like that suddenly is an abrupt violation of Shastra, and therefore is rejected. There is no such system in Shastra. Hare Krishna. In every science, in every endeavor and field of knowledge where one wants to advance, if you want to learn violin, you go talk to Aruni, because she's got 5 violins in her room right now. And yes. Can we have a microphone?
There's one conversation that comes to mind that Prabhupada has, and he says, if you want to know...
Can I turn that mic on for her, please? Or hold it right in front of your mouth. It's for everyone on the internet, it's being broadcast.
He says, if you want to know who your father is, you have to ask your mother. There's no other way. You can go around like asking everyone in town if they're your father, but the only true way to know is ask your mother. And that would be the spiritual master. And there's no other way to know for sure. That's like the simplest way to explain it, I think.
Mm-hmm. Simple. More. Yes.
How do we draw the line between accepting someone versus formal initiation? I mean, it's getting... Like, sometimes I also feel that maybe, is it, some people even think it's technocratical, or is it, you know, like...
A technicality?
Technicality, or is it, you know, like, is it, I mean, I accept someone from my heart, how important it is, and like, to get, like, formally, like, yajna and all.
Well, let's ask Shastra. Mm-hmm. How important is it to take the formal initiation? First of all, I'll give you a logical presentation. If you have a girlfriend and then you talk to your parents and say, well, how important really is it if we get married? I mean, it's not a really big deal, right? Is there a difference between having a girlfriend and actually getting married? I mean, is there a difference socially and also as far as your personal commitment? Ramana Nosaka has got a big smile when he's saying.
Yes, because when we get when we have a girlfriend, the relationship is very casual. No one really cares, except those who are loving each other. But once they get married, it becomes official. It gets recognized by the government. Now the courts come into picture. All the tax man will be behind us. So it's very, and it becomes official at that point. You cannot easily get out of it.
That's right, and so there's a lot of implications there, and that's called vidhanena. That means authorized process. So there's an authorized process in getting married. There's also an authorized process of initiation. Yatta kanchanatam yati kamsam rasa vidhanataha tatta diksha vidhanena. This is a verse from the Hari Bhakti Vilas, which says, Yata kanchanatam jati, kamsam rasa vidhanataha. That when you take the metal, bell metal, and you combine it with mercury in the right combination, you get gold. It's a miracle that we don't know much about. That's called, according to the Goswami's, vidhanena. That means the authorized process. You have to do it correctly. Then you get it. Tata diksha vidhanena. Then he says, similarly, diksha is like that. It's a process which actually transforms a person from iron into gold. And how is it defined? Vidhanena. According to the process, the shastric process, where one approaches a spiritual master, takes shelter of the spiritual master. This is the injunction of the of Rupa Goswami. We are Rupanugas, followers of Rupa Goswami. He says, Adau Gurav Ashrayamam. In fact, in all of the processes of devotional service, he lists these first three as the most essential in advancing in devotional service. First thing, Adau. He said in the very beginning, the first thing is, Adau Gurav Ashrayam, take shelter of a guru. And then he says, Swadharma Pritcha, that you must inquire from the guru. Sadhu anugamanam means follow in the footsteps of that guru and of the sadhus. And then in Chaitanya Charitamrita, we hear more about diksha, this process, actually, the official process of, you know, saying that I'm accepting the official initiation in front of the Vaishnavas, in front of the deities, in front of the fire. Dikshakali, Bhaktakari, Atmasamarpan. Shekali, Krishnatari, Kari, Atmasam. A remarkable verse from our Shastra, which says that when one accepts Diksha, Dikshakali means at the time of accepting Diksha, Dikshakali, Bhaktakari, Atmasamarpan. This represents, or you can see it either way, this represents full surrender of the devotee, that I'm surrendering myself under the care of a spiritual master. Or you can say that it's completed when one actually surrenders oneself. Atma samarpan means full surrender. This is an act of surrender, that we submit ourselves to another authority. This is what Prabhupada's talking about in this purport when he says, one should always remember that a person who is reluctant to accept a spiritual master and be initiated is sure to be baffled in his endeavor to go back to Godhead. One who is not properly initiated may present himself as a great devotee, but in fact he is sure to encounter many stumbling blocks on his path of progress towards spiritual realization. It is Krishna's process, and therefore the second part of the verse says, Shekali Krishnatari Kari Atmasam. When somebody comes forward and accepts the process, Krishna accepts that person to be as good as himself. That's what the verse says. Atma samarpan, when he surrendered, Krishna atmasam. Then Krishna says, this person's on my level because he's surrendered through my process, through the parampara process. He's accepted. So one must accept the process and not invent another process or try to avoid the process based on disappointment or some other idea. Rakshit Prabhu.
Some of these instructions that you read about Jiva Goswami and others, in one way, they very much sound like the onus is on an individual, a person, to come forward and undertake this process. It is not saying much about the mutual connection that may precede such a process. That is, I don't know why one would be reluctant. Why would one be reluctant? Even in marriage, why would one be reluctant? If one comes into contact with a compatible, mutually likable person, and a connection happens, and then there is reluctance, there is a problem. But it says very little here in this instruction that is given about that connection occurring, the two-way process. It sounds very much like the onus is on the person to approach a spiritual master and go through the process. One point was made about, is it a technocratic process? It, to a certain degree, comes that way. Some precedents or example can be taken. For example, if you look in Srila Prabhupada's own life, we have been told that the moment he met Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, a connection occurred. In fact, both of them confided. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati said that I saw him and I knew he would be my disciple. And Srila Prabhupada also mentioned in his writing that the moment I met him, I knew he would be my spiritual master. It still took 12 years, as I understand. I may be wrong about the chronology, but 12 years it took before Srila Prabhupada formally accepted initiation. But the point to be made is that there was the connection that preceded it, as opposed to just a one-way process whereby which an individual has to go through this and satisfy the requirements of Shastra, because the individual may also ask that something has to occur in my heart, I have to feel it, and I would undertake this. So something needs to be said about a two-way process. It's not just the role of the disciple in taking on a spiritual master, but also some indication from the spiritual master or some interaction from the spiritual master that makes the disciple feel, well, this is it. I want to hear at this point now, ask this individual that, would you give me initiation? This was just an observation that comes across when Shastra gives out these instructions, that it very much comes across that the onus is on the person to undertake this, and says little about the response of the spiritual master that can ignite a spark or a connection which can precipitate actual initiation. Mm-hmm. Just a point.
Thank you. Well, actually, Shastra does speak about this. Just from a technical point of view, Sanatan Goswami in his Hari Bhakti Vilas says that a spiritual master relationship is based on a mutual observation, and that such observation, the guru observing the disciple observing the guru, should take place for at least a year. It means that there has to be a connection. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, the process of Diksha also is explained when Krishna appeared in this world. And Krishna appeared first in the mind and in the heart of Vasudev. And then he was transferred into the heart of Devaki and then into her womb, actually. It's a transcendental process. And Prabhupada says, this is actually Diksha. And the great Acharya Viraragavacharya, speaking on that, says that this diksha is a heart-to-heart connection. It's not something, as Prabhupada says here, an ecclesiastical thing. It's just the most natural thing in the world. It is the most, it's a divine connection, actually. When there's, Prabhupada often says, you know, when the man is potent, the woman is fertile, then there's a child. And that's a kind of a natural thing. It's not so hard to understand. And when there's somebody who is, who within their heart has awakened the desire to understand God by good fortune. How does that happen? By good fortune. Because somehow or other they've been given good fortune through association with some devotee somewhere, and they have this kind of sukriti, and now they want to know God. And it's natural to come into the association of devotees at that time. Ado shraddha tata sadusanga. When you have shraddha, it's not like you have to read a book and shastra and say, you know, I have to be over here. It's just the most natural thing in the world. As soon as you desire to be a devotee, you want to go, where are they? I want to be wherever they are. And you just show up. And it doesn't matter if it's on the other side of the planet. We've met people who have gone over hill and dale to find where the devotees are. I remember when I first heard about devotees and decided that I'm going to be one of these people, I did everything I could to find out where they lived and how they lived and where how I could become one of them. And so that's a natural thing, that somebody who's desirous of becoming a devotee comes in the association of devotees, and that's what Prabhupada said here. Then it's also a natural thing to take guidance. If I'm submissively trying to advance in any science, I'll find a person who can instruct me. And therefore, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said that how should one look for a guru? Does it have to be among the Brahmin caste? Or does one have to have a beard? Or does one have to walk in a certain way? Or, you know, whatever it is, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, forget it. He said, that's not how you find a guru. He said that it doesn't matter if one is a Shudra or, from a low caste. And even Rupa Goswami says in his Nectar of Instruction, it doesn't matter what the person looks like. Externally, they may be even have a deformed body. Those aren't considerations. What is important? The person knows the science of Krishna. And, you know, the technicalities of Shastra, we must present those because we live on Shastra. We direct our lives through Shastra. Therefore, we quote the Shastra. There's Shastra and there's Shastra. Shastra means the weapon, you know, the sword. And it's the words are related. When we go outside the teachings of Shastra, then we get, you know, Maya brings out her sword. But within that, it's a very natural thing for there to be an attraction for somebody who's looking for spiritual knowledge to find a teacher. It's not such a difficult thing to find a teacher. Does the teacher have to be living? I mean, it practically is, for somebody who's very sincere and searching, it's an absurd question. To look at Krishna's instructions, tad vidi pranipatena pariprashnena sevaya, upadakshanti te jnanam, jnaninas tad vidarshina. Implicit in those instructions about inquiring from a person and offering obeisances and service, obviously there's a personal relationship involved. And it is a mutual thing. You can ask anyone who's doing the service of being a spiritual master, of doing that service. It's a service to Krishna. And it is a challenging service. You have children. You know what it's like to take care of somebody and to be responsible for somebody. It's not a breeze. And it's also... It's the duty of a spiritual master to find those who are qualified. In fact, it's an offense, according to Shastra, in the Harinam Chintamani Thakur Haridas says, if a spiritual master initiates someone who's not qualified, he makes an offense or she makes an offense to the holy name by initiating such a person who's not qualified. So Shastra is there to explain what the system is, what the process is. But in the middle of all that, for those who are sincere and making inquiries, and those who are trying to give Krishna and represent what their spiritual master has already said, it's a very natural thing. And it's a very potent process. Is that right? Yes, please.
First, Rakshit Prabhu, I really appreciate the point you're bringing up, because it does sound sort of one-sided if we're just quoting certain verses. But I really like the purport that Vaisheshika Prabhu quoted from the Adi Leela of Chaitanya Charitamrita, because there Prabhupada really explains the natural progression of how one finds a spiritual master and takes initiation. And he says it begins with receiving instruction. And Prabhupada, in one letter, he says that, you know, you shouldn't take initiation from somebody who you don't believe can really help you. And so the natural progression is you have a teacher, you inquire from them, some advanced devotee, and their instructions actually help your life. Something changes. Even when you mentioned Srila Prabhupada, it all happened, you know, in one day or in a few moments, but it wasn't so much that Prabhupada saw Bhaktisiddhanta and said, yes, this is my guru. Actually, what changed him was Bhaktisiddhanta's words. Bhaktisiddhanta's words opened his heart. It opened up his awareness, and he saw that, yes, unless I surrender to Krishna, unless I teach others about Krishna consciousness, then I'm wasting my time in this world. And his spiritual master's words awakened him, and that awakened his faith. Therefore, he accepted him. And so when you meet somebody who really, their instructions really help you in spiritual life, that's something concrete. And it's something, that's where your faith begins. This person helped me. You know, without this person's instructions, I would have went off, you know, down another path. And so, and it's not, you know, some, you know, it's like you were saying, Prabhu, it's very natural. And it's an everyday experience in some ways, comparable to any teacher who helps us in our life. And that's where the faith and the trust begins. And Krishna does say that tadvidi prani pratena prayaprasnena sevaya upadekshanti te ganam ganinas tadvidarshina. You know, you approach somebody who has seen the truth. And how do you know they've seen the truth? Because they help you see the truth. And when you've been helped to see the truth, that's concrete. That's reliable. That's where your faith begins.
Thank you. There's book Bhagavat and there's person Bhagavat. And book Bhagavat is described as the passive agent. The person Bhagavat is described as the active agent. So, you know, can you just impersonally, or if, you know, I'll just take instruction from the previous acharya through the books. You may have that, but then where's your active Bhagavat? Where's the person who's going to help regulate your schedule? And, you know, in between, for instance, Prabhupada's purports, bring in new people who want to come to Krishna consciousness, and we'll take the Dr. Spock method. He was a psychologist in the 1960s who had a theory that really you shouldn't interfere with children's development, just leave them to their own devices. It turned out to be a complete disaster. Take his method and we'll say, the new people will just throw them in a room with Prabhupada's books and let them figure it out for themselves. Between every line and purport in Prabhupada's instructions, there are a million questions. And those million questions can be answered by those who have received mercy from Prabhupada, who have followed his instructions, who have carried wood for him, who have developed a clear understanding and realization of what those things mean, who were there at the time when he gave the instruction and have a context for the whole thing. Which means that there's a flavor that comes out to the person that you don't get. Just you read the book and self-direct. That's why Prabhupada said it's like a boat without a rudder. There's something that you get from the person that you don't get anywhere else. Personal touch. When someone comes here who just got off the plane from Hawaii and smells like the beach and has sand in their shoes, you can ask him about what Hawaii's like. Or you can look at the brochure. Which are you going to... I mean, both are good. But you're going to get a special quality from that. So book, Bhagavat, person, Bhagavat, these things, they all go together. Fact is, getting out of the material world is a very difficult thing. It's not put a coin in the machine and then, you know, you're out. I'll just follow some, thing like that. We need help from every angle we can get. And those who realize their situation that I want help, I want out of the material world, whatever direction they can grab in and hold on to, they'll take that. I don't know whose question I'm answering. Sorry, I'm looking at you. Microphone.
You know, the biggest thing is just we have to learn how to let our light shine, you know, let the love flow from our heart. When I was a hippie kid, you know, I took LSD like the rest of them, you know, some of them. And I was having these outer body experiences. But by Krishna's mercy, I was feeling this love energy flowing into my heart. You know, I was reading books about the third eye, you know, meditation on yogi. I was living in a cave in Laguna Beach. But, I wasn't so transcendental because I didn't know what was going on. I just know that there was something going on in my heart. And I didn't have any knowledge of Krishna or the spiritual world. And then I heard the devotees chanting one day, and I joined them chanting, and it was so ecstatic. I was in this little hippie place, and I heard the kartals outside the door, ch-ch-ch-ch-ch-ch, and Mardanga, Haribo, Hare Krishna. And I was dancing with him, went back to the temple. And then I met Srila Prabhupada in La Cienega temple. And when he started speaking, I knew right away that this was the person to follow. He knew everything about love, about Krishna, about the spiritual world. And so that really woke me up quickly. And then gradually, you know, my heart's been growing ever since. And, of course, the desire shouldn't be, the strongest desire we should not have is getting out of the material world. It should be the strongest desire is to just learn how to love God, you know, love Krishna. And we automatically become liberated, you know.
Yeah. Thank you.
Jai Prabhupada.
Thank you. Jai Prabhupada. So I'll take three reflections. Need a few reflections coming back tonight. So one thing that stuck in your mind from the reading or the discussion. Yes, Manish. Microphone.
Put in simple words, accepting a bona fide spiritual master is one reflection that, you know, to really progress in devotional service. You have to accept a bona fide spiritual master. That really reflects from this conversation.
Okay. Thank you very much. A couple more? Shraddha?
I was also thinking that if you are a giver and you have gratefulness, then you will not just rely on books. You would, you know, take a spiritual master because then you have the taste of reciprocation. Just reading from books is a one-sided thing.
Thank you.
I have a little one listening to everybody speak tonight. I met a devotee 3 years ago, and after you were speaking, yes, I'm just not talking loud. I met a devotee 3 years ago, and I was always looking for something, but I didn't know what it was. And he was he had all the answers, and I'm still friends with him. My wife and I are friends with him and his wife, and we go to his home for Gita studies and everything, and it's brought me here and to Berkeley and to the festivals in San Francisco. And tonight was the question of spiritual master has been in my head for months, and it took me forever to get here today, and I almost felt like driving home because of the traffic, but I just wanted to come here. And you were talking about desire to get to some place, and everything was going through, and it was very nice to hear everything today, and it solidified a lot of questions.
Good.
Thank you very much.
Phew. What a nice reflection. He drove to Modesto. How do you work? From Modesto. Hare Krishna. Couple more? Possible? One thing that's stuck in your head? Yes, we have. 1, 2, 3. Microphone can come down here.
One point that struck in my mind is those who do not accept a spiritual master are sure to get baffled in their efforts to go back to their God, to go back to Godhead, and also they must continue the material miseries. I don't know what exactly that sentence is. It says something like birth after birth, they have to still continue their miseries.
So. Thank you. You had a point? Right back.
Simplicity, just today, it just seems kind of complex. I don't know, maybe it was just a lot of points going back and forth, and just, I think it's really because in our minds you're so complicated, so hard to simplify. You know, it's actually really simple, but you're so baffled already. So I cannot simplify things. So I think I'm going to work on that a little bit.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Get in the way of our own self.
You have a point?
Yeah.
Our material.
Wait, microphone.
Clarify, you know. That's the big problem. Our minds are, you know, our material energy, the material body, our minds and our desires, lust, anger, and greed is tripping us up, you know. We have to read Shastra, follow instructions of the saintly persons that have seen the truth, and then we can finally, you know, subdue our minds, because Prabhupada always said, you know, the mantra is like a shoe, beating the mind, you know. And first, you're trying to stop the mind from agitating so much. And at first, it seems like, you know, like some medicine that doesn't taste good. Oh, you got to chant your rounds, Prabhu. You didn't get your rounds, and you got to chant your rounds, you know. But then after a while, when we start relishing the mantra, then it's not a chore. It just becomes like sugar candy. And then we start, you know, realizing the relationship we have with Krishna. So in the beginning, we have to be diligent and very carefully follow the rules and regulations. And then after some time, we still follow rules and regulations, but we're not thinking of things like that. We're thinking of, you know, how can we cook for Krishna? How can we serve Krishna? Once we actually start feeling devoted and do bhakti yoga, then we become very attached to serving Krishna and chanting. And so we must all try to get it attached to chanting the mantra and serving each other. By serving each other, then we're serving Krishna, we're serving Guru. So we have to be servants, we're eternal servants. So if we serve each other and learn how to do that, and learn how to be humble, you know, then our love in our heart will grow quickly. Humility, because we're so puffed up since time immemorial, you know. And so somehow we have to learn how to be humble and serve each other and be soft-hearted, be soft-heartedness. And that's not easy thing to do. But if we can achieve soft-heartedness and humility, then we can actually hear the mantra, and we'll find out so many miracles through that sound vibration. Krishna is wanting to laugh with us. He wants us to experience the reciprocation relationship that's there. It's just dormant. We're just covered up, and everything is, we're sleeping. So as soon as we start getting into the mellows and the beauty and the bliss and the ecstasy of the Maha Mantra, as soon as we get into that mood of surrender and giving our hearts, then Krishna quickly is there. There's no distance, because Krishna is closer than our touching our two fingers. He's closer than that because we're a part of him. We're Krishna's energy. We're the same quality exactly as Krishna, same loving qualities, no difference. And so he reveals things like that to us by sincerely serving and chanting. But it's we have to just give. We have to be givers. Like when we chant in front of the deities, don't just say the mantras, but realize this is Krishna, the Archavigraha. Lord Chaitanya is the most merciful deity. And so we must approach him with a loving heart while we're chanting, giving our heart, giving the love, let it flow out of us. Let our light shine. And then quickly the deities will reveal themselves, and we will know Krishna within our heart. The exchange of love will become aware of it by giving the heart. And it's so important to give to the deities, not just standing there like sticks and stone. We should raise our hands. We should sing with a glad and happy heart, because Krishna is wanting us to give him pleasure. That's what it's all about, because we're prakriti. Krishna is the enjoyer. So when he is enjoying our love energy, then he gives it back 100 times. Jai.
Haribo. Jamuna.
Oh. I was trying to listen a little bit in the middle unit and just thinking about Spiritual Master and Diksha and Shiksha Guru. I feel like there's these books, and for me, the connection with the Spiritual Master actually activates the knowledge in these books for me. I'm not such an intellectual. So just that connection helps really activate listening to his teachings, and then my association with my Shiksha gurus activates my relationship with my guru, because I don't see him that much. And so association with devotees also activates the knowledge and all of these relationships. It's just like it all gives energy. It's like all the way up to the books at the top, which is all of the supreme knowledge. So for me, just coming here and getting it just reactivates all of the connections to my guru, to the books. And without it, I feel so dry. It's like there's my books always sitting on my shelves, and I can even read them. But just coming to the temple now, the next couple of weeks, so I'll be able to really get more from them. It's amazing. Thank you.
Thank you. You had a reflection?
Yeah. So this living itself is taken, probably in a relative sense, and I believe each one of us has a different conception based on our realizations. So irrespective, I guess the point is to surrender to Krishna and love him, and probably get past, you know, trying to extract an absolute sense out of the word living. I mean, that's what I could gather from today.
Okay. Aruni, last word? No? Okay. So I'll give the last word. That is that spiritual discussions in the association of like-minded devotees who are interested in going back to Godhead are vitally important for advancing in devotional service. And that's what we've all done tonight. Thank you. Congratulations. To understand Siddhanta, Siddhanta means to understand what something is and what it also what it isn't. And in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Kaviraj Goswami says, Siddhanta Bulya Chaitanya Kara Alash. Don't be lazy about this. Discuss it. Because by discussing openly, thoroughly threadbare from many different points of seeing, in association with devotees, then he says, Sudrid Manash, your mind becomes fixed, and you get determination in devotional service. This issue about initiation, about accepting a guru, is a very important part of our Siddhanta. And I've found that if there are misunderstandings about this, there's a tendency from within the heart to hold back. Or if there are doubts within the mind and heart about, you know, what is the process? How do I move forward in anything? If I join an organization or a school or whatever it is, and I don't know what's the next step, or I think, well, maybe somebody says that's the right step. Somebody else says, if you take that step, that's the wrong step to take. If I'm confused about that, then I won't move. I'll just stay where I am, and I'll just say, this is good. I'm not going to move. The light of Shastra, the discussion between devotees, this is what our organization is for here at ISV, for us to come forward to take help from the Shastra, to take help from our gurus, take help from each other, so that we can understand precisely how to surrender to Krishna. That's the great science, and to move forward. So I thank everyone for your questions, your probing questions tonight. And this is the beginning of a long conversation that will continue in a few hours. So thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki jai, Shri Upanishad ki jai, Gaur Bhaktivinoda ki jai, Gaur Premanande Haribo. So let's put all the book Bhagavats away, and then we'll stand up and have a kirtan, giving our love to the deities through our chanting. Hare Krishna.